We'll begin with a few just technical announcements. Schedule-wise, there's definitely no class next week. I'll be in Eretz Yisrael. I wish I could give you a definitive answer about 2 weeks from now, but I'm not sure when we're coming back. We're coming back on Tuesday, so if we were back Tuesday morning or so, jet lag could pass, have time to prepare the shiur. Perhaps if we're coming back late Wednesday night, especially from New York, late Wednesday night, I have a feeling that I will not be in a condition. So I would say, assume now that there is no shiur for 2 weeks, and that we'll meet back, I guess, that first week in December. But stay tuned to the bulletin if there are changes to that. But most likely, unless you hear otherwise, there will be no shiur for 2 weeks. So we will try to do an extra special job tonight to give you something to hold on for the next 2 weeks. I wanted to, as I've said in the past, the purpose of this shiur is not to move fast, but to study in depth. We won't always be moving so slowly, don't get nervous, but really I still want to spend today's shiur on the first pasuk. Actually, we'll do a little bit of the second pasuk, but similarly, if you will, to last week, we'll be inspired by a Rashi. And the truth is, as you may all be familiar, and certainly you can become familiar, the Rashi in general, particularly the Rashis on the opening pasuk in the Torah, are so full and so rich and so in-depth that the truth is we could spend a lot more than two shiurim. In fact, I'm leaving out, it's almost hurting me that I don't plan on giving another shiur about another Rashi on the first pasuk. But I think we'll really be moving on, certainly when I come back from Eretz Yisrael. But I really would like to read again. We'll have reason to touch on the second pasuk as well, so I'll read the first psukim. But all of it is really, as I say, a way of getting to some of the lessons. There are sort of seats in the back, if you guys could give them to people as they're coming in, if they can get one yet. Really, to get to an issue, the whole shiur will revolve around some issues that come out of one very powerful Rashi. So let's open up our chumashim once again, and let's read the first pasuk. But I'm going to ask someone to volunteer to translate it for me. You'll understand why, I hope, as the shiur goes along. Bereshis bara Elokim, Eis Hashamayim v'Eis Haaretz. Now, I didn't ask you for a very difficult pasuk. There's no very foreign. You gotta come closer, Jesse. You gotta come closer. I feel I want to be closer to you. My throat doesn't, if you may be able to tell. So closer will be easier on my voice. Thank you. There's also actually still seat right up front. I told you last week. It's true. That's up to you, but the seat in front is really where I want you. There's nothing difficult in this word. I bet you, independently, every one of you is familiar with every one of the words in this opening pasuk. So do me a favor, just put it together and translate it for me. Who wants to translate the first pasuk? I didn't ask you for art school. If you want to quote it, that's your business. I'm asking you, Harry. How do you translate the first pasuk? Don't be fancy, just translate. I asked for a translation. No one wants to give me.
The beginning of God creating the heavens and the earth.
Oh, so Harry, that's our scroll?
That's our scroll.
Ooh. Now,
I should say Rabbi Sherman or Rabbi.
Okay, Rabbi, yeah, that's a Sherman probably. Okay. Okay, so say it again louder.
Well, it is in the beginning of God's creating the heavens and the earth.
Now, Gene, is that how you were going to translate it? No, how are you going to translate it? In the beginning, God created heaven and earth. I think almost most of us translated that way, right? So why did Harry, why did our scroll change it up on us? That's going to be in a certain part the crux of the whole shiur. Right there. You ready to know where we're going? How do you translate the first pasuk? We just heard two different translations. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. Or Rashi's, the article translation, in the beginning of God's creating heavens and earth. That's a very, very different translation. Why is it different? What are the significance and implications of the two differences? Those different translations, we'll see that in a moment. Take a look now. Let's start with Rashi. So I want to skip the first Rashi, which is what we spent time on last week, and we're not going to go far, just to the second Rashi. Bereshis bara. Ein hamikra hazeh. Omer Ella Darshani. This pasuk is like shouting out, analyze me, explain me. Meaning, it's difficult to understand as is. There must be something we need to do. Why? So he tells us what we could perhaps learn from it. We'll have to see soon what Rashi is bothered by, why he feels there is such a need. But he says, "Kamo shederishu rabbeinim zechonam livracha." This is the way our Chazal have understood the pasuk. What does Bereishis really mean on a midrashic level? B'shvil haTorah shenikra Bereishis. It means that the creation of the world was for, what's the purpose of creation? For the Torah. And where do you get that from? Apparently this is a conjugation, so to speak, of Bishvil Rashis. Now, what does Rashis have to do with the Torah? So that's why he cites the proof text, as the Torah is quoted, this is a pasuk in Mishlei, Rashis Darko. The Torah is referred to as the beginning of his way. And not only that, it's not only Bishvil HaTorah, Ubishvil Yisrael. Why is the world created? Why did God create the world? For the Jewish people. Shenikru, similarly, Rashis to Asa, metaphorically, from Pasuk and Yirmiyah, the first of his crop. Bishvil Yisrael, Shenikru Rashis, Bishvil HaTorah, Shenikru Rashis. Now, the basic, where was Rashi says that he's commotion of Darshu Chazal. This is a Chazal. So what, perhaps, is the source of Rashi? Look at your sheet. I gave you, it's really a compound. Rashi puts together two different Midrashim. There are parallel versions of the Pasuk in Midrashim and other sources, but one of the Midrashim that we have, one of the bodies of literature, is what's known as the Medrash Tanchuma. And it was meant to be a Nechama. It's written to be an uplifting type of, it's very, very good for drushas from that Tanchuma, because that's exactly really what its purpose is. So, the first Medrash tells us, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Bar Shalom, B'schus Yisrael Nivra Ha'olam. The world was created in the merit of the Jewish people. Why? Mikodem Bara Elohim Ein Ksiv Kan. Why? The Torah could have said, in the earliest times, Mikodem, but that's not what it said. Or it could have said, Umitchila. But also, Ein Ksiv Kan. It doesn't say in the beginning, Mitchila is what we usually say, beginning, also not written here. Ella Bereishis. Why pick the funny word Bereishis, which means literally, what does Bereishis literally mean?
It means the beginning of.
We'll get to that in a second. But what does Bereishis literally mean? What is Bereishis? Forget the base. First. So why in the first? What does that mean? So he says, oh, Ella Bereishis. Mahu Bereishis. Elu Yisrael Shenikru Ureishis. And gives a pasuk from Yirmiyah. It's for the Jewish people who are referred to very flatteringly as Bereishis, the first, meaning the choice. Just two little paragraphs later, that's...
The first two words, then, the alternative of tenem and mitchila, seems to be like before something or after, before something, and there really isn't time involved before.
Racious doesn't solve the problem so much. You're saying...
Like first, in the process of whatever is happening now, it's done...
Okay, good.
The other words, I don't think...
It's all difficult. You're right.
That would be Barisha, no, I think, not Barisha.
Yeah, Barishas is a very...
But I'm saying...
You mean as opposed to Kedem or Tchila? Good. I could easily see Tchila not being a problem that way, but it's a good point.
That's why I'm badly arsehole, because Rashi's normally a Hebrew dictator, you're going to expect something.
You're all getting to the point I'm about to make. But let's just see the second Medrash, two paragraphs later, the same Medrash, the Tanchuma there in Simon Hey. Bereishis bara Elokim, Maksiv Bereishis bara Elokim. Why Davka the word Bereishis? Ein Reishis Ella Torah Shneamar, quoting a pasuk from Mishlei, Hali Bereishis bara Elokim. It's for the Torah that God created. So Rashi, as we saw last week, remember we started off with Rashi Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, and that was even more mysterious. What medrash, or was there a specific medrash that Rashi was taking it from? We saw three different medrashim. Some have the similar idea last week, but not in the name of Rabbi Yitzchak. Others had some... We basically saw a similar phenomenon last week with the first Rashi, that he's basing himself on earlier sources in Chazal, but he is taking certain literary license. As he quotes them, he's kind of cut and pasting and putting them together for the sake of his commentary for his point. But the basic source of both of these, this Rashi seems to be the idea of the Torah, Bereishis, B'shvil Reishis, it's for the sake of a purpose. This is, if you will, the first part of my title of my shir, the why of creation. Rashi, Chazal, tell us, why did Hashem create the world? To the extent that we can understand such a question, B'shvil HaTorah, U'B'shvil Yisrael. If you want to see an interesting source that somehow puts it all together, So there is a famous commentary on the Torah known as the Baal HaTurim. The Turim of Yaakov ben Asher. He's the son of the Rosh, that's the Asher. He is the one who basically wrote, if you will, the first modern Jewish legal code, the Tur. The Shulchan Aruch, which we're so familiar with, is actually based off of the Tur. The whole concept, for those who are familiar, we divide up Jewish law into these four categories of Orach Chaim, Yerideya, Evan Ezer, marital law, Choshen Mishpat, commercial law. All of that was never existed until the Tur of Yaakov ben Asher. That's what the word Tur means. It means rows. The formal title of that halachic work is Arba Turim, the four rows. It became known as the Tur. So the same author had a certain mystical and interesting bent, and he has a commentary on Chumash, which is just known as Baal HaTurim, written by the one who wrote the Turim. So what he's famous for is all sorts of word and number games. That's, if you will, for those who are... Anyone who likes gematrias, there's none better than the Sefer Baal HaTurim. He is ingenious. Now, that doesn't speak to everybody, gematrias. It doesn't usually speak to me, frankly. But he's ingenious at this. This is not just, if you will... with all due respect, some Chassidish Rebbe figuring out a vort saying it's bigger Sheva Brachos. It's the Baal HaTurim. This is a significant source. But again, it's a little shticky, and that's why I say not everyone goes for it. But sometimes, and this is to the extent that I find it relevant, I don't know, it's hard to know how true what he's saying is. Can we objectively verify that this is the code that's, so to speak, embedded? Hard to know. Some people, as I say, it appeals to. Other people are a little bit more cynical. But very often, whether you like the numerical or the word game, there's a very deep and powerful message that he embeds. So one of the things that he does, aside from the gematrios with the numbers and stuff, is he also does what's known as a nutrikun. What's the fancy English word for nutrikun? I forget. Epigram? Where you take the first letter of each...
Acrostic,
maybe that's what it is. Acrostic, I think it's an acrostic. So that's what's known in Chazal as a nutrikun. So look at the Baal HaTurim, the third source on your sheet. What does the word Bereishis mean? Beis, Reish, Aleph, Shin, Yud, Tav? Bereishona, Ra, Elokim, Shikablu, Yisrael, Torah. So it does speak to people. Good. Again, is this what Hashem meant when he wrote the word I don't know. But the Baal HaTurim suggests that this is a deeper meaning embedded in the text. Why do I quote it? There's a lot of sorts of other things the Baal HaTurim says. You can imagine on the first psukim of the Torah, there's a lot of mystery there to begin with, as what we've alluded to. So this is perfect ground for him. But the one reason I picked this one is because there's the message that is embedded in this little code of his is exactly the one that Rashi is trying to make, and the Midrash is trying to make more flowery. Namely, Barishona, from the outset, what was the purpose? What's the goal that we're shooting for when God creates the world? Again, we're very far away in the opening pasuk from there being any Jews, let alone a Jewish people. In a worldly sense, there's no such thing as a Torah yet even. So what is it all about, even though it seems so far away? The answer is, says the Baal Turim and these Midrashim, is even from the beginning. Even in the beginning, in the mysterious of whatever you want to call it, the Big Bang, or whatever happened, it was all for that higher, ultimate purpose. Rishona, Ra Elokim, Shekabu Yisrael Torah. This source, in one little, six-letter words, ties together this Rashi, these two Midrashim. Now, the question is, why does Rashi say, Einem Mikra Ze'el Meril Darsheni? Why was Rashi so bothered that there has to be a drush in this pasuk? So the answer to that is what was alluded to already twice. And I didn't quote it here for you, but many of the other Mefarshim, like the Ramban, Ibn Ezra, others, point out that there has to be something, etymologically, grammatically, when you have a word such as a Bereishis, we expect it to be something coming afterwards. It's what's known in Diktuk as a Nismach. We're expecting something there. Bereishis of what? In the beginning of what? So, the question is how to resolve that tension. So Rashi is actually going to give us two answers. The first answer he gives is, again, it's not an attempt at telling you that this is the plain literary meaning. He says it's a drush. What is this drush? It's telling us a deeper message about the higher purpose. Now the truth is, before we even get to Rashi's second explanation, which I think Seymour might have been alluding to, because it's a machlokes between the Rashi and the Ramban, and how to read the text in a more rigorously literal sense, before we get to that, it's also worth noting not only did Rashi, so to speak, conjoin the two Midrashim of Torah and Yisrael, the truth is that there's a third source that may also have been an inspiration for Rashi, and yet actually has a longer list. So far, it's cut and dry. What's the purpose of the world? You know, it's like they send you out there, like a shliach, tzavos Hashem, you're ready. What's the purpose of the world? Eat. You know, it's a, you can teach people this one. Bashil Yisrael, Bashil Torah. Simple. The truth is, if you look at the next source on your sheet, which in a certain sense is an even more authoritative source, it's the Medrash Rabbah, Bereishis Rabbah, that's the classic, most mainstream of all the Midrashim on our Pasuk. So he has a different thing. First of all, he tells us in the beginning, Lo nivra ela b'shlas haTorah. Okay, well, that we're familiar with. It's the Torah that's there for us. But then he says, ooh, there's lots of other opinions. Look at the end of the first line, Reb Rechya Omer, b'shlas Moshe. It's all for Moshe. Quotes a proof text, where Moshe is referred to as Aracious in some form or another. Then, oh, Rav Huna, b'shlas Rav Masna, Omer, end of the line, b'shlas Gimel Devar Emal Nivra Olam. Three other things. B'shlas Chala, and here Chala does not mean making braid of challah. It means taking off, which in theory could be of any baked item, depending on the amount and the ingredients, and giving that in the time of the Beit HaMikdash to a Kohen. That was one of the gifts we gave to the Kohen. Similarly, other two gifts, the B'shlus Maisros, Maiser, giving one-tenth, U'B'shlus Bikurim, when you bring your first fruits each year to the Beit HaMikdash. And he can go with proof text for each of these three or four things, where they're referred to as Gracious. So, first of all, we have two questions. What is that all about? If I tell you the world is created for the Jewish people, or for the Torah, or in the Baal HaTurim synthesis, for the Jewish people who will accept the Torah. So, whatever it means, I think we all get it. We're not, I don't, if you're worried, which I'm not focusing on tonight, but there's certainly a legitimate question in the general scheme of things, and it's an important Ashkafic idea. So where does that leave the rest of humanity? The whole issue of universalism versus particularism, the chosen nation. I mean, those are real issues. And putting that aside, if I told you that the purpose of the world was for something, most of us would say one way or another, Torah, the Jewish people, the Jewish people and the Torah. But all of a sudden, these four other things are a little bit surprising. Moshe, okay, it's important. Even that I can hear more. Once you're telling me it's somebody, who are you going to pick? Moshe, okay. Chala, Bikurim, Trumos.
Because each of those stand for a mile of ratio. Bikurim stands for Akarat Chala stands, the Maisa stands for Gemil Chasodin.
What's Chala?
Chala.
Okay.
Come on,
Chala. That's your job. This is an interactive class, Alan. So I have two questions. One is, what's the story with these other four? They don't seem to measure up, you know. What is it from Sefer? One of these things is not like the other? So that sounds like, really, I would say four of these things. You know, if you ask me, what belongs in this box? You know, it's like in the SAT, you know, one of the multiple choice tests you have, you know. What are the things that you would expect to be Bishvil? What? So you might have checked, you know, and then the seventh answer would be answer A and B. We would have said A and B, maybe. Someone would say, but the other four. A second question, which is I want to get to, is, well, why didn't Rashi quote them? Why didn't Rashi quote them?
Yeah, this is a general question. The world was created, the Jewish people, so Moshe Rabbeinu. Why did God create the Jewish people, Moshe Rabbeinu?
Good question. Good question. That question is a subcategory of the question which I'm not going to discuss, but I alluded to, which is how does one understand the whole idea of a chosen nation, and once you, whatever you're going to say about that, well, what room does that leave for everybody else? And listen, I don't think I'm telling any secrets out of school, whether it's in our day and age, but frankly throughout history, there have certainly been people from the Jewish people who have not been so convinced that there really is any worth to everybody else. Right? This is a problem that we've always had in our community. Now, to be fair, in earlier generations, we had easier reason to do that because the other people weren't treating us so nicely. But we all know that there's vestiges of that, no matter how nice our host country is. But without defending certain abhorrent behaviors or patterns of speech, those of you who have heard me in the past know that I've condemned, but the bottom line is, it's still a philosophical question. Maybe not one we want to ask in public, but one we certainly should know for ourselves. How do we understand the role of the chosen nation? And whatever you're going to say about that, so then where does that leave everybody else? And I think our chinuch for our children, and I, to every school that I've ever known, including the ones I went to, never addressed these kind of things. Not sophisticatedly, that's for sure. And it's a problem. It's a problem. But none of that's what I want to talk about. As is, we're going to go slow. But, yes. So I'll tell you, The Ibn Ezra, in his Hakdama, makes fun of people who, you know, those who are familiar, the Ibn Ezra is rigorously shot-oriented to the point that sometimes he says things that are very controversial. He makes fun of this. His comment is, you'll find everything. He goes, wait, you're going to pick six, you're going to pick two. You don't think there's nothing else that's ever been referred to as a racist in some pasuk somewhere? Why stop there? And he actually says it cynically, yeah. Things I want to do. First is answer my first question, which Alan tried to, but I want to show you an answer that's the opposite of Alan's. Alan said, and even Ethan was suggesting perhaps, or maybe you were actually saying this other one, you'll tell me, but what Alan said was, each one of these six stand for something else. Each one of them are so important. Another way of looking at it is to say, on the contrary, all six are essentially saying the same thing, that there's actually one pattern through all of them. What's the unified message that may be alluded to by all of these? So this is something that I saw suggested in the very important, it's a modern work, I mean modern meaning 20th century, but a very important one, the Oznayim LaTorah. Oznayim LaTorah was written by Rav Sarutskin, who was a big, big Rav in Europe, and it's actually his son who then became part of the Telzer dynasty. Now, already going back over 50, 60 years, the Sarutskin name is associated with being one of the Rashivas of Telz. If I'm not mistaken, the author of this sefer, I believe, predated their connection. He's the, so to speak, patriarch of the family. Also is a big, and he has very, very excellent, excellent work on Chumash. Excellent, very good stuff in this sefer, Oznayim LaTorah. He also has a tshuvas called Oznayim LaMishpat. Very, very excellent, big, big Talmud Chacham. So he suggests, and I'm just going to, for the sake of time, I'll paraphrase it outside, but it's the parts that I've underlined here. He suggests that all of these are really trying to say one thing. That the purpose of the world, it's again, it's not one thing as in one word, it's one sentence, if you will. We can unify it together, one theme. That the purpose of the world is that there should be a Torah, that the Jewish people should accept the Torah, but, you know, this is where what he adds to that, which we could have had alone, and this is where the other four ideas come in, is that who's going to know the Torah? Who's going to master the Torah? Who's going to teach the Torah? Who's going to teach the people what to... So the it's not enough to say there's a Torah here. You know, I'll throw the rule book at you. You figure it out. That's not going to work for most of us. So he says that's the purpose of there should be a Torah to the Jewish people, and then that there should be designated members of the people who can focus their energies on mastering the Torah so that they can then teach and lead everybody else. That's why it's Bashil Yisrael, Bashil the Torah, Moshe the archetype, obviously, of our leader who's a teacher. And the other examples, he doesn't focus so much on tzedakah or thanksgiving like Alan said. He says, no, they're all ways of saying we have to help the chachamim, whoever that may be, symbolized, obviously, as in many sources, by Shevet Levi, the kohanim and the levim, who in theory, their job is full-time to be, so to speak, not only spiritual teachers, but guides and mentors. So that's just a suggestion. You can take it or leave it. But he suggests that that may be the running theme of all six. But now the second question, which is a little bit more of a, not Pshat Chumash, but Pshat and Rashi question. So why, if that's one of, this is all part of the same Medrash, why didn't Rashi quote the other ones? So I haven't seen too many people discuss this. It could be, again, there's only so much I looked up. But one of the things that I saw quoted was by the Mizrahi. The Mizrahi is a parish on Chumash, a parish of Elio Mizrahi, the Re'im, as he's sometimes known. And to bring up a term that I taught you last week, he's what's known as also one of the earliest one, actually, called a supra commentary. He didn't write his commentary on the Chumash. He wrote his commentary, on Rashi. He's a commentary on a commentary. He's a commentary on Rashi. So the Mizrahi suggests that the reason that Rashi doesn't quote these other things, if you say I'm reading from the second line, lo hi v'yem Rashi v'peirusho v'shum dekra im lo brisi yomam v'layla chuko shamayim v'aretz lo samti. Very famous pasuk in Yirmiyah. That basically tells us, if they don't keep the bris day and night, then the chuko shamayim v'aretz, the laws of nature, the laws of the world, will go kapui. The whole world needs to exist for the sake of the bris. The question is, what is the brisi? So the Mizrahi says, it's not 100% clear, but he says, and this is the part that I didn't include for you, you can look it up inside, I just gave you the ellipse, the three dots, for the sake of space, but what the Mizrahi says is, he shows, depending on how you read the pasuk, legitimately and rigorously, you could read the pasuk in one of two ways. Perhaps the bris is referring to, I think it is often quoted, the Torah. If people don't live by the Torah, then the world will collapse. But the other thing he suggests is that that's one way to read the Pasuk. But another way he reads the Pasuk is that the Bris is who the people who made the Bris with Hashem. The Jewish people. So he says both of those possibilities, Bishvil Yisrael and Bishvil Torah, those could be the hint at that Pasuk from Navi. The other four, Chala, Moshe, they're all wonderful things, but they're not the Bris that the Navi was talking about. Now what he doesn't defend, he just kind of assumes, that's why Rashi would feel the need to understand the Medrash in light of that Pasuk in Navi, which Rashi himself never even quotes, another Midrashim quote. But there is, Mizrahi suggests that the reason that only those two were quoted in Rashi is because, I'm reading you the bottom part here after I have it underlined. He says, Lo hibiyam Rashi beperusho mishum de mikra dim lo samti, etc. Mashmashe abavuram nivru hashamayim varetz. Lo mishtama ela o Torah o Yisrael. He says, you can read it one of two ways. Either the Pasuk in Navi is referring to Yisrael or it's referring to Torah. Abachala and the other things, elem svach min ha-mikra. They have no connection to that Pasuk in Navi Yirmiyah. Apopizhe heivium bebrishis rabba. Even though the six were mentioned in that medrash. Nevertheless, lo raza lahavien besifro. Rashi did not want to quote those in his commentary. Me'achra kosa lo tala b'riyas ha-shamayim v'aretz ela bechad mishnei elu o b'Torah o b'Yisrael. That's a suggestion made. Again, Mizrahi was a Rishon, a later Rishon, but one of our earliest sources and one of the earliest people is already commenting on Rashi. Rashi already had such an influence in his day. That's why Rashi picked those two and not the four. Now, all of this.
In essence, that's what Ethan was saying in terms of the shot.
Shot and.
That morph.
Yes.
Shot as opposed to the other.
Listen, before we got to the Brisis Osamti, when I made my Sesame Street remez. That was the same point also. Namely, even if you didn't have a pasuk, if I asked you, what are the ones that really pack a punch? What are the ones that can you imagine the world really would depend on? So who would say challah? I have to say challah is wonderful halachos to learn. My second to last year in yeshiva, which was the year of the Shemitah, so we spent half the year learning the laws of Shemitah, and once we were already in Mishnah's Seder's Rhyme, we did the other half of the year learning. There's a four-perek mesechta in Mishnah called Meseches Challah. So here, these 25 guys, we were learning challah the rest of the year. So I always have dreamt of doing a lecture series called challah, not just for women. It's actually very, very sophisticated and very, very, also for women. But it's there's a lot there, there's a lot of meat there. Not studied too often in yeshiva, unfortunately. But, yeah, so anyway. So it's important to challah. You're not going to find a bigger fan probably than me. People who don't bake it, I just like to eat it. But challah, is that really what the world was made for? Epis chillin, maybe. Challah? One second. So, that's essentially the gist of the Mizrahi. What he adds, what a Mizrahi can add that I wouldn't be able to add, is he ties it into the Pasuk in the Navi, which again, you have to take a look inside. I didn't put it down for you, but he shows how the Pasuk could be read plausibly in one of two ways. Because it is a little bit ambiguous, either the Torah or Yisrael. Yes, Seymour, because we have to move on. I think so, yeah.
He does.
I think so. He discusses this. If you look at the footnotes in the Shavel Ramban, he gives you some Bakaras and Mar Nevuchim, which would give you plenty of work to do.
So what is his
answer? That's not the Shir. It's a Chumash Shir.
Are they playing word games, or are they asking the question philosophically, like the Ramban would ask, why did God create...
It's hard to know. But I think that what I'm trying to show, even in the Balaturim, who is, if you wanted to accuse anyone of what you just did, would have been the Baal Turim, but I'm suggesting is there's whatever their way of expressing it, they're trying to express very profound ideas. That's what I'm suggesting. Yes?
It's interesting that the quote is a chazal, which would suggest that that's, those are three of the essentials of Briya Chol.
Right, so if we're doing a Pirkei Avos here, which is also a good idea, maybe one day we will. So the question is how to understand that Mishnah. What does that mean, Olam Omed? Right, there's another Mishnah, right? We know there's another Mishnah. Anyway, there's a lot to talk about there. There's a lot to talk about here. I want to confine our issues to the Pasuk. As it is, we're going slowly. If we did all these issues, we'd never get our Pasuk out. So now, let's move on now to the second issue. Ad Kan, our first question. Our first question is for what purpose? Why did God create the world? So Rashi told us, based on Midrashim, which we've now analyzed and seen why he took from this and not from that, but ultimately, if we wanted to know Rashi's answer, which the Mizrahi says is is the two more important things. The Oznayim L'Mishpat says even if you had a big list of six, it's all essentially one common theme. Namely, why did the world get created? Was Rashi suggests? What's the higher purpose? What's the Mishnah Torah? Mishnah Israel. Okay, that's the why. Good. Now, we've mentioned, now we're going to sink our teeth into it a little bit more. You'll turn back into Rashi, open your Chumashim again. Rashi started off by saying that there's this whole problem that leads him to try to give this analysis. What's the issue? So I alluded to the fact that I mentioned before, two of you have already mentioned it, that in typical grammar, you would say the first, or for that matter, if you want to translate Rashi's at the beginning, however you want to translate it, typically it's the context. Of what? If I told you this is the second, that's an unintelligible, meaningless sentence unless I finish it. Second of what? It's the beginning. Of what? So that's why Rashi says, Ein apostol gomer el darsheni. So what's the drush answer we saw? But okay, we're not going to be satisfied with that. It's a deeper level of understanding, whatever drush is. But what's pshat? We got to start with pshat. So Rashi tells you, so if you want to know, I have a more rigorously literal understanding of the pasuk, he continues. Turn back and see your Rashi. And he now asks, everyone have it? I don't have the same chumash that you're using. So somebody call out, where is this in the Rashi? In Vasa Lefarsho. Computer. The right hand column?
Right hand column, yeah,
8 lines down or so. The in Vasa Lefarsho Kipshuto. And if you want to give a more rigorously simple understanding, a literal translation, what is it referring to? Says Rashi, how should you read this phrase, Bereshis Bara Elokim Hashamayim Haaretz? Read it, Bereshis, namely, Bereas Hashamayim Haaretz. In the beginning of Hashem's creation of the world, and now guess what? You say we really moved this today. We're going to go look at Pasuk Beis. Haaretz Haisa Sohu Vavohu. The world was empty and void. V'choshech apnei v'chom, darkness on the surface in the deep. V'ruach elokim merachefes apnei amayim, and God's surface was hovering above something called mayim, which we don't even know yet it was because it wasn't created yet. Very, very mysterious psukim. So, getting back into Rashi, what does Rashi say? How do you read these two psukim now as a unit? Bereishis brias shamayim, not bereishis bar elokim. Bereishis brias shamayim baretz. In the beginning of what would become ultimately the creation of Shemayim Ba'aretz, what was going on? Nothing. Ha'aretz ha'isa sohu vavohu. The earth was empty and void. Choshech, and there was darkness. And it was only then, Vayomer Elohim, he or, let there be or, let there be light. In other words, and if you look, I'm not going to read it for the sake of time. If you look a little bit further in the Rashi, you'll see this idea that we were mentioning before, that Bernie mentioned before, the idea that typically Bereshis would have needed to have been connected to something. That's what Rashi spells out, what was bothering him. So Rashi, therefore, so to speak, rereads the simple reading of the pasuk. So if we started off the shir by asking, how do you translate it? So it was Gene and most of us versus Harry, you look at the art scroll. So where did art scroll get it from? Art scroll got it from Rashi. Look at your art scroll again. Now read the English in the art scroll again. In the beginning of God's creating the heavens and the earth. Now I don't know one of you who before today would have translated the pasuk that way. I'll leave it to you, and I include myself.
Even Rashi doesn't say God's creating. Even art scroll has God.
Okay. Bereishis Bereas Hashamayim Baretz. Correct. In the beginning of the creation, although the word Elohim is in the pasuk. So you get the word Elohim is in the pasuk. I can't blame art scroll.
Okay.
So, including me, I don't know any of us who would have otherwise translated this pasuk that way. And what that means, since that means that we weren't aware of a simple Rashi on the first pasuk in all of the Torah, that's why we're having this series, because none of us want Chumash well enough. This is how we should have been taught in first grade. This is how Rashi reads the pasuk. It does not mean in the beginning God created the heaven and the earth. That is a mistranslation, according to Rashi. Rashi says, in the beginning of God's creations of the heavens and the earth when there was nothing else, then, so let me ask you a question now. Sneak a peek at the psukim. If I had to ask you now, based on Rashi, at what pasuk, at what point in the Chumash, does the actual creation of the world begin? What pasuk?
That would be pasuk Gimel.
Pasuk Gimel. Only when pasuk Gimel begins. That's the first act of creation according to Rashi. What's the first thing that's created? Light. Now, you'll ask me, and if not, you should be, and we should all have been bothered by this our entire lives. How could there be a light before there was a sun? You all have such quick answers. I'm impressed. I don't know if any of you are even right, but you got quick answers. So now you want to translate things metaphorically.
Yeah.
Other people want to do that, you call them a kofar. So there was some kind of a light, and then later Hashem created the sun. I don't know. What I'm trying to tell you is that I don't know, and that none of us know. I'm just trying to... Oh, a radiologist. Where does Rashi say that?
Later.
Which Rashi? Are you sure it's a Rashi? If it is, you take a minute, Barry. You look and find it for me, okay? Yes. Huh? Oh, so we don't need... So good. But what I did now is Rashi. Okay? This is... Rashi. Good. Hold on. So this is what Rashi says. Rashi says that the correct translation is in the beginning of God's... In other words, the first two psukim are an introduction.
Look at Pasuk Yudal.
Introduction.
Yudal. What is he saying, Yudal? What are you referring to? Give me a second. I'm looking. 1 second. Which one? Which Dibur Maskil? Yihimaros, the first one? Good. Good. So keep that in mind. It's very interesting. Keep that in mind. You'll see why I was pressing you to find it in Rashi in a minute. I mean, we got a lot to cover still. I love the participation, but I got to try to balance it. Okay. Let's see a little bit more inside. Now, until now, that's Rashi. Rashi is bothered by what is Bereishis. Bereishis should have something coming after it. Since it doesn't, Rashi, in a certain sense, rereads it to say. Not Bereishis Bar Elohim, but rather, as Rashi tells us, Bereishis in the beginning of the Briyas Shemayim Varas.
It's the introductionary.
And exactly. Beis. According to Rashi, Pasuk Aleph through Beis is basically one long sentence of an introductory phase. What's the first thing that's created? Good. Now, look at your sheet. The one who most famously takes Rashi on and will redeem not only Gene, but all of us who thought to translate the Pasuk differently. The Ramban is a hero for us in many, many ways. But he'll be a hero tonight for this one little reason. Right, he'll redeem the first grade teachers and everybody who translated it in the beginning. God created it. Why? Look at Rashi. Look at the Ramban, bottom of the sheet. Ba'akushel Rabbeinu Shlomo Peres there, so he quotes Rashi as Rabbeinu Shlomo. Ki amar shimba lo haro seder habriya ba'elu, lomar shehim kidmu, hayelo lichto barishona, she'ein reishis b'mikra she'ein samuch. That's what Rashi thought. You can't have a ratio, so that's something else. Now, the part that it's a very long Ramban. Feel free to look at it inside in the Mikros Gedolos. I put a lot of it on here for you, and I only gave you about half of it. One of the parts that I cut out here is he then goes through and shows how that's not true. He digs up with his brilliance all sorts of psukim in Tanakh, where you can have a ratio without something immediately coming afterwards. So that's how he attacks Rashi's pshat. So what is he going to offer instead? Something very profoundly philosophical. I'm not sure that any of us will walk away fully understanding it. And it will be something that we can keep in the back of our mind for some future promised shiur, which I don't yet know when we'll do, probably at the end of the Bereishis when we get to that, which is to take a step back and look at some of the mysteries philosophically, and as I say, I alluded to last week, even very recently, about creation, that it happened really in 6 days. Is the world really 5,765 years old? What's going on? Do we believe in evolution? The Big Bang? As probably all of you are familiar one way or another, these have been major issues since these ideas have been proposed in science. I'm not talking about just the last 5 years. I mean the last 100-plus years. Major issues that great rabbanim and philosophers have been trying to deal with, you know, the old science-religion issue. And if we're studying creation, it would be chaval for us not to take a look at that. Whenever we get back to that, we'll pull probably this Ramban back out. Because the Ramban says something very, very fascinating. Look at the Ramban says. Va'ata, shama perish hamikra pshuto nocham bar. Now I'm going to tell you a simple pshat. How do you read the pasuk? Not like Rashi. Rather, underlined. HaKadosh Baruch Hu bara kol hanivraim me'afisa muchletes. Absolute nothingness. This is what we refer to in Animam type thing. That is Yesh Me'ayin, creation out of nothing, fancy Latin, ex nihilo. Okay? Now, Ein Be'etzleinu, Ein Etzleinu, B'Loshon HaKadosh, B'Hotzos HaYesh Me'ayin, Ela Loshon Bara. Says Ramban, he's giving you a rule of the Hebrew language. There's all sorts of synonyms that mean to create. The uniqueness of the word bara is if you take nothing and you make something. That is a bria. If I take three things and paste them together and make a toy, that's something else. It's not, whatever, there's also different synonyms we can think of, but that's not bria. Bria is something from nothing. Okay, that's step one. He still hasn't put it all together yet. The Ein Kol HaNaaseh Tachas HaShemesh Olamala, which is his flowery way of saying, the rest of creation, there will be nothing else, the rest of creation, subsequently, Hove Min HaAyin HaTchila Rishona. The rest of creation is not going to be Yesh Me'ayin, it's not going to be Ex Nihilo, it's going to be based on whatever has already been created. However, Hotzi Min HaEfes HaGamur HaMuchlot Yesod Dak Ma'od. Out of this absolute nothingness, that, if you will, we can't use the word time because it has no meaning, but predating this act of creation, out of that absolute nothingness, God created what? Some very fine material. That murky soup, maybe that the scientists, the primordial, the soupy thing that the scientists talk about. This may be what the Ramban's referring to. Ramban says, what was the act of creation? What happened to that word voracious? God created some super-duper material. Ein bo mamish. It doesn't really have a physical form or substance. Avahu koach mamsi. It has the power to create and produce other things. Muchan lekabel tzur. It can be formed, again, without losing. It's not like you, my kids like to play with Play-Doh, but we all tell them, if you make it into a this, you're not going to have enough zoh for something else. So this stuff can be made, and it'll be made into an earth, but there's still plenty left to make it into oceans, and there's still plenty left to make it into all the trees. It's this material that somehow evolves into every one of the other things that are created. It goes from the potential to the actual. This was the original matter, and he says, he endorses the view, Nikra Yavanim, this is what the Greeks called, Hiuli. Now, if you know ancient Greek philosophy, which I once upon did, not too familiar, I haven't studied it in years, they spoke, the great Greek philosophers, the Rambam and others showered tremendous praise on, they had this concept that the creation of the world was started by this matter that had these creative powers. Nothing was created, in the quotes, using that word bara, nothing was created after that matter. Aval yotzar v'osa. It was formed from that matter. Ki mimenu himtzi hakol, v'hilbish hatsuros, v'hitkin osa. It's from this that God produced everything, and hilbish, he uses a little bit of a flowery language, he clothed each one of these forms into something else. He clothed a little bit of the matter into what we call mountains. He clothed a little bit of it into what we call the heavens. He clothed a little bit of it into what we call oceans. That's how God created the world. Bada, he says, next paragraph. Ki hashamayim v'chol asher bahem chomer echad, v'ha'aretz v'chol asher ba chomer echad. Really, it's all, anything in the heavens is essentially cousins with each other, because they're all from that matter that God used to create heavens. And everything in the world is essentially all cousins with each other, and it's all from the matter that God used to create, quote, the aretz, the world. V'hakadosh baruch hu bara elu shneihem me'ayin. Two things that God created, so to speak, were two aspects of this hiuli thing. One was to create all the heavens, one was to create all of the earth. V'shneihem levadam nivraim. Only these two were what's called bara. V'hakol nasim mehem. Everything else came from this. He seemed, yeah. The earlier part it sounded like there were one, and the end of this paragraph, But again, it's all from this Yuli. But apparently, as I understand it, and again, I'm not claiming to really understand it. There is somehow different dimensions to this Yuli. One part led to the Shemayim, one part... So how does the Ramban translate it? In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. The same way most of us would have translated it when we walked in. And what does that mean, says the Ramban? It doesn't mean the earth that we see. It doesn't mean the heavens that we see. It means he created this potential, this ultimate matter that is the source of everything that would eventually become. That's why it was created first, because everything came. Now look what it, now the Ramban has another chiddush. Look what he says, and this is how he ties in the second pasuk. What was the second pasuk? Now before all this, Ha'aretz ha'isa sohu vavohu v'choshech al pnei v'om. What does that mean? Says the Ramban, v'achomer hazeh shekaru hiuli. So that was Greek. What do you call that in Hebrew? Says the Ramban, nikra b'lashon hakodesh tohu. When the Torah says that the world was tohu, that doesn't mean before creation. That's the result of creating this matter. It's now tohu. It's completely void of form. But it's not empty of... It's not nothing. It's this matter. Primordial matter. He tells you where it comes from. Fascinating. Why did they pick the word tohu? He quotes from the Gemara that tohu means to regret. And in Mishnaic Hebrew, tohu means to regret. Says the Ramban, that's because anyone who tries to come up with a word for it realizes he made a mistake. It's insufficient. So anything you try... You know you can't get the first base. It's like what the Rambam, you asked me before, I'm to Huchim. The idea the Rambam talks about is what we call God's negative attributes. You can't say God is strong, because if you say strong, you seem to be implying that he's not something else. So all we can say is that he's not. So similarly, says the Ramban here, tohu, vohu means, because you can't say anything else about this material. It's too, it can't be put into other words. Vahatsura, next underlined part. Hanilveshes lachomer zeh nikra b'loshon hakodesh vohu. So, somehow this combined is the primordial matter, the form that it takes. That's tohu vavohu. Vahamila morkeves kolomer vohu. It's a conjugation. What is vohu? Bohu. In it, it is. Meaning everything comes from it. Bohu. It's all from it. That's tohu vavohu. I'm sorry, Bernie, now what you want to get back to. Now you can read the Pasuk. Mashma'u, so how do you read the Pasuk? B'tchira bara Elokim es ha-shamayim. In the beginning, God created the heaven. Ki hosi chomer shelahem me'ayim. Because it created this potential out of nothingness that would be known as shamayim, which would then be subsequently refined and refined and refined to make the actual planets and whatever else. The Eis Ha'aretz. Why does the pasuk say Elokim es ha-shamayim es ha-aretz? Similarly, Shehot Yachomer Shelah Me'ayin. How do you read the opening pasuk? Before there was really nothingness. Then Kriyad created this primordial matter, which again, I don't know if it's two different matters, two dimensions of the same matter. I have no idea. I wish I knew. But somehow that's Reishis Bara. God created that. That's the first thing God created. Not on the first day. There was not even a day yet. That's before you can have any days, whatever the days really mean. But you can't even have that yet. There's no concept of time in any sense yet. What can you have? This matter. And then the Ramban, going backwards, he had tied it into the continuation of the pasuk. So when the pasuk, because really the truth of the matter is, typically the pasuk's out of, before you read this Ramban, the pasuk's out of order. In the beginning, God created heaven and the earth, and then we go back to him, pasuk bays that the world was tohu vavohu. So when I was a kid, and I'm embarrassed to say, probably including sometime when I would be called not a kid anymore, if you would have asked me to really think about it, I wouldn't have been able to put the first two psukim in the Torah together in any logical way. In the beginning, God created heaven and the earth, and then the second pasuk says that the world was nothing. Didn't he just create the heaven and the earth? How do you put the first two psukim of Torah together?
But according to Rashi,
how do you put it together? That's okay. So what does the Ramban say? Now the Ramban, if he's right, it works beautifully. In the beginning, there really was nothing, whatever that means. Nothing. Then God created this primordial matter, which had the potential to create Shemayim V'aretz. Everything that really is what we call Shemayim V'aretz came from that. And then, as the pasuk continues, V'aretz ha'isa sohu vavohu, that's not anachronistic, that's not going back before, and that's what happened next. What was the result of creating this hiuli, this primordial matter? The world was tohu vavohu. What does tohu vavohu mean? So he explained tohu vavohu are allusions to this new state. And then, once we have this material, what's the first thing it was refined into? Then we'll be ready for Pasuk Gimel, what the Torah refers to as Or. which you guys want to refer to as radiology or something. But we don't have to be fancy. The Torah says, "Orem, I, until you tell me otherwise, I'm going to assume it means light." So that came, that's the first thing that was created from this material. But it wasn't the first thing that was created. So if I'll ask you, I asked you before, when we finished learning Rashi, I said to you, on what pasuk does the beginning of the creation of the world begin? Now, this is a very basic shaila. We are not, you know, you go home and you tell your friends or your siblings or your spouse or somebody, you know, what you learned today. It's not going to sound so impressive. We're not dealing with Rashi. I'm not teaching you the mysteries. This is not some esoteric razzle-dazzle shir. I'm talking to you about the most basic ways to read Chumash. And the answer is, even that's not simple. It really is sophisticated. It really is complicated what we're doing. That's the most basic things when it comes to the creation of the world are. There's so much hanging on every word. So if you want to know, simple question. Any one of us would have been embarrassed to admit we didn't know the answer before tonight. Where does the creation of the world begin? And what pasuk? Now you know it's not so simple. It's a machlokes in the Rashi. And Ibn Ezra seems to hold like Rashi, interestingly enough. The Ramban quotes him and the Ramban makes fun of him, as he often does, against the Ramban. According to Rashi, creation begins on the pasuk Gimel. According to the Ramban, and this is one of the arguments in favor of his pshat, you don't have to wait till pasuk Gimel. It starts right away. In fact, one of the non-Jewish great biblical scholars of last century, I don't know if he knew the Ramban or not, but he assumed, as a typical Christian translation, is in the beginning God created the heaven and the earth. And he writes, but how powerful it is that we start off, and that's a powerful way to begin. In the you know, if you read the, this is a little bit lamer, the one that Harry read from the Art Scroll. It's not as powerful, like, wow, arresting. You expect the first pasuk in the Torah to be arresting. It is according to the Ramban. It's not according to Rashi. According to Rashi, it's like, you know, the first, you know, but the truth is, you know, usually you're supposed to, like, you know, when you take creative writing or something, you know, they tell you, you know, that first sentence of each paragraph, you got to smack them so they want to read the rest of the paragraph. So the Ramban really smacks us. Ramban says, in the beginning, God created heaven and the earth. So what I want, I hope, before we finish, we have one more part of the shiur to do, time permitting. But even just at this point, what you can take home, especially you realize now how complicated it is how to put together just these two psukim, and you also realize that this most basic idea, this machlokas being the rational mind, gets to the heart of really so many of it. It gives you a glimpse of the mysteries that surround the creation, certainly objectively, and even more when it's explained to us through the Torah. When did the world start? Sorry, how did the world, what was the first thing that was created? According to the Ramban, and others who do follow him, Rabbeinu Bachai, I think the Sforno, a few others do follow this Ramban. It's a very famous Ramban, you understand why. This would be an important makor to know. God created this primordial matter called Shemayim Ba'aretz. Oh, that gave potential for Shemayim Ba'aretz. Under Rashi, no such thing. The opening two psukim are just a hakdama, an introduction. In the beginning of this story, which you're about to hear, the following happened. Now, what actually happened? Oh, that's Pasuk Gimel. Yeah.
I'm listening to what you're saying. It seems to me from the Talmud and Mikra that Ramban would be more accurate in a sense, because it says Bereishis, it doesn't say Bereishis bara Elokim HaShemayim Ba'aretz. It says Nachka after Elokim. Bereishis bara Elokim. Those are the three words that should go together.
And what did he create? Shemayim? Yeah. I'm going to give you more proofs for the Ramban in a minute, okay? Yeah. Speaking of Tommy Amikro, yeah?
Speak up, I can't hear you.
We can't hear you. I wouldn't want to go there. Okay. Now, I will tell you one last thing. I haven't read most of this, and I'm not sure how much it will be subsequently relevant, but it's a first interesting book. One of the many books that Rabbi Moshe Eisman has written is a book called Beginnings. Have you seen this? He meant to write a book on all favorite Bereishis, and much like my course, but I had the benefit of, I guess, hindsight, he realized after writing this that he had just gotten through the first parsha and he had a book. So he actually kept his original introduction. He writes how he knows it's weird. But if you look at his introduction, what he calls some introductory ruminations, it's not about Parshas Bereishis. It's all about Sefer Bereishis. And then he tells you, I kept this in because I think it's interesting, because I was planning on originally writing a book on the whole Sefer. So I haven't gotten through the whole book. And those of you familiar with his style, some people like it very much. I definitely find something to learn whenever I read his books. I'm not sure how much, although I can hopefully will plan on reading the whole book. We'll see if I quote it subsequently, but it's certainly worth knowing about. But one thing I just want to tell you is, and I thought it was a beautiful drush, it's a beautiful Musar idea, he says. His own suggestion, we have the answer, you know, why Bereishis is supposed to have something else after it, this Nismach. So that's what Rashi assumed. Ramban says, no, it doesn't really need it. But assuming that Rashi says it should have had it, so he asked the question, so then why doesn't it have it? In the beginning of what? Why didn't the Torah tell us? So listen to what he says beautifully. This is the end of chapter 1 of his book. He writes, the missing Nismach points to this element of uncertainty. Bereishis in the beginning of? In the beginning of what? There is no way of telling. The what is shrouded in mystery. It'll only be what we decide. Let us determine where we ought to be heading. It's open-ended, because that's life. We'll see where we go. So, this is nowhere near pshat. But I thought it's a nice idea. It's a very, very beautiful idea. Now, last point I want to mention today in the shir. Excuse me, my cold is still very congested. Is that I think that we may have two possible proofs for the Ramban. Perhaps Tam Emek would be third. There is a famous Mishnah in Avos. You mentioned Perkei Avos before. In the fifth parak of Perkei Avos, that talks about all that we're learning about. We're learning about creation. What does the Mishnah in Avos tell us? The fifth parak? Ba'asara ma'amaros nivra olam. The world was created with 10 utterances. Couldn't God have done it in one? So why does it take 10? So that the wicked who don't do well, they're going to get punished even more. When the wicked do aveiros and ruin the world, they're really going to get it because they're destroying something that really took time. You know, if I got my kids are at least once every 2 minutes. One of my kids is screaming that one of the other kids broke something they were doing. And I am quite confident it's not only in my house. If it's not in your house, it's only because your kids are out of the house. Okay? Now, it depends. If it's something that my daughter just started coloring and then my son came and ripped it, could happen any day. Okay, she's going to be upset. She gets upset about anything. But if it had been something she'd been working on for days, and what did this? Building a hold up, and then he did it, that would be World War III. Why? She put more effort into it. That's what the Mishnah says. The Rishayim are going to get. Why does Hashem, the Torah? Why did Hashem have to put in so much effort? It took him 10 weeks to build, so to speak, 10 mamaros. Because it gives it more. When you mess it up, you've messed up something that God put a lot of effort into, and therefore He's going to exact even more revenge. Conversely, on a more pleasant note, Ulitein Schar Tov LeTzadikim Shemakayim Misaolam Shnivra Basam Mamaros. They are the tzaddikim who are mekayim the world. So there, again, if you just saved a little nothing, so then how much is that worth? But if you save a whole 10 mamaros world, says the Mishnah, again, this is the Mishnah. No, I'm not analyzing, just telling you the Mishnah. Now, first of all, what are the 10? So if you look, we won't read it inside, but if you look at Bereishis Rabbah, he quotes a machlokus about one of them. But here in this Medrash, the Medrash quotes 9. He quotes 9. 9 times in the creation story, the word Vayomer is used to designate the creation of something. If you look, not only do you think this is a nice Perkei Avos Mishnah, it's Musar, it's Drushi, this idea of God creating one Tamamaras is quoted twice in the Gemara, which teaches us 2 important halachos which affect us on a yearly and weekly basis to this very day. Fascinating, of all things. The 2 Gemaras I have beneath, Gemara Rosh Hashanah and the Gemara Megillah. Gemara Rosh Hashanah tells us, how do we know that there have to be 10 psukim from the Malchios, and Zichronos, and Shofros, and the Rosh Hashanah Musaf? How do we know that? Says the Gemara, in one opinion, because of the 10 Ma'amaros. Gemara Megillah asks, and teaches us a halacha, which is that if you want to make an aliyah, let's say it's a Monday or Thursday, it's a short laning, or let's say you're making a hosafa in shul, you're adding something. Says the halacha in the Mishnah, the Gemara, there's not allowed to be an aliyah less than 10 psukim. Where do we know that from? Says the Gemara, in one opinion, because God created the world in the Yisar Mamaros. So before we analyze where these are coming from and what they have to do with each other, first of all, I told you that the Bereishis Rabbah only quotes 9. Where's the tenth? There's nine Vayomers. So look at the Gemara. You look at either one of them, the Gemaras repeat themselves. But look at the first Gemara, Rosh Hashanah, that talks about the davening on Rosh Hashanah Musaf. The Gemara asks, Hey Ninhu Vayomer, Divereishis Tisha Havu. If you look at the creation, there's only nine Vayomers. So how does it say Eser Ma'amaros? Says the Gemara, Vereishis Nami Ma'amarhu. The word Vereishis, the opening pasuk, what we're focusing on the whole night now, that is considered a, quote, Maimar, an utterance. The Chsiv, as a pasuk in Tehillim, says, Bidvar Hashem Shamayim Na'asu. That with the words of Hashem, the heavens were created. Now, this is why I didn't see this anywhere. And again, I'm sure Rashi would probably have an answer. But right now, how does this serve as a proof for the Ramban?
Sure, because it was created already that
the Bereishis created with Bereishis.
That too, but I think maybe this is what Ramban, what someone else going to say something? How is this a proof for the Ramban? According to Rashi, there's no creation in Bereishis. So it would be very strange to me for Rashi to assume that there's no creation happening in Pasuk Aleph. Creation does not start until Pasuk Gimel. Rashi told us that explicitly. The first two Pasuk were introductions. There's no creation in first Pasuk, and yet the Gemara can tell us that that first Pasuk is the tenth, or the first, depending on how you want to put it, of these Ma'amaros that created the world. To me, that is very strongly indicative that the Ramban is correct, that Bereishis itself is an act of creation. Now, before we run out of time, we're very, very there, I'll tell you outside the last source. The last source is the parish on the Chumash, the Torah Temima. The Torah Temima was written by Baruch Halevi Epstein, the son of Yechiel Michel Epstein, the Baruch HaShulchan, and it's not from Tam Chacham, a successful banker, if I'm not mistaken. He was a businessman. He wrote a commentary on the Chumash called the Torah Temima. He did two incredible things. Number one is, on each pasuk, he gives you a little list. He gives you a summary, a quote, of whatever Gemara anywhere in Shas that quoted that pasuk. This is before computers. It's incredible encyclopedic knowledge. Underneath, on the bottom of the page, he also has some of his own creative commentary. And the truth is that he is sometimes very creative. Not everyone's always in love with every one of his pshatim, but very interesting. So he analyzes this. And he says, you know, what's going on with... He has a different question, which is, why? What's the connection between the idea of God creating the world in 10 utterances and how we daven on Rosh Hashanah, how we, whether we lay 9 psukim, 10 psukim, why should that have to do with Asar Ma'amaros? So he says the following, being there a birur of Mashkas of Ramban, we can answer based on the Ramban. He gives you a whole quote, which I summarized, I cut out, but he gives you a whole quote of the Ramban. And he says, why is it that the other 9 are what he calls an Amira Mufaresh, the Torah uses the actual word Amira. Hainu ha-Amira li-Yesodos shu-Tziuhu toldos. Something already existed, and that is, so to speak, the basis which is going to give birth, so to speak, to something else. So God can tell it, matter, now turn into the oceans, turn into the landmass, whatever it is. What the Torah tells us about in the first pasuk of the Torah, Shamayim va'aretz, shelo kidem lahem kol yisod. There was nothing before them. It's yesh me'ayin, lo kasuv b'hu amira mufureshes. Kei mishlo haya o davar ba'olam she'elav yifan ha'kadosh baruch hu kav yachal b'mayim v'tzivoy. Vayomer means that God is telling something to become something. But there's nothing, so to speak, to tell to create the first matter. Once you have the first matter, and as he takes it from the Ramban, which the first matter evolved day after day into other forms, then you could tell each day, turn into this, turn into that, turn into that. But before there's anything, what are you talking to? So therefore it couldn't be used, says the Torah theme, with the language of Amira, which focuses on talking. Now, this is also, again, if he's correct, again, there's the Gemara that even Rashi, everyone has to accept the Gemara and the Mishnah, that there's 10 Ma'amaros and that the 10th is Bereishis. No one disagrees with that. I don't know what Rashi would say, but this would be a second proof, so to speak, for the Ramban, that it's really only based on the Ramban's understanding of how creation occurred that the Torah can answer up why the 9th or the 10th one of those, Bereishis, is not in the Lashon Vayomer. Final issue with this, we'll conclude and give you a 2-week break. Not a bad class. 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. Right, you have a lot of time to review. Test, first week back. Okay. after vacation. He asked the question now, what connection does this Mishnah and Perek Yavos have to do with the halachos of how you daven on Rosh Hashanah, how you lane? So he says, each one is important. On Rosh Hashanah Nivra Olam, Chayin Osin Zecher Veremez. What's the purpose of Rosh Hashanah? We're celebrating, commemorating the creation of the world. So it makes sense. It's not such a leap. Say that the way we're going to express that in our davening will be patterned how, after how God originally created it in 10 Ma'amaros, we'll have 10 Psukim. What about Kriyas HaTorah? What does that have to do with anything? Monday, Thursday, davening, Shabbos Mincha, laning on Shabbos, what does that have to do with anything? Lagabi Kriyas HaTorah, Alpiyah Mavur, Mikara Makomo, Silav Torah, Lohava Mitkaim Eishmai Varetz, Lachain Kovu, Mispar Zebu, Kriyas HaTorah, Leida Lohodiah, Mitokev to Udas HaTorah B'kiyum Olam, to give us a big oomph, a regular reminder how essential Torah is to the sustaining and maintaining of the world. I suggest to you that we ended where we started. Bishil Yisrael, U Bishil HaTorah Shenikra Reishis. Says the Torah to me, that's the source of the... Right? Ein Melech Ho'am, as we say in Rosh Hashanah. Ten Psukim on... Malchus, Zecharus, and Shofros, because we're commemorating. We, his people, are commemorating that God created the world. Bishul Yisrael. And Bishul HaTorah, Shenikra Reishis. The purpose, that's why this idea of Ten Psukim, where anytime we're laning, we're reminding ourselves, Ten Psukim minimum, to remind us that this is the bedrock of the entire creation of the world, is that you need to have these ten. Mamaros created the world, minimum ten. Every time we study Torah and as a tzibur, to remind us how essential Torah is the establishment of the world. Thank you again for coming, especially on a cold and rainy night. If anyone wants to ask a few questions, I'm happy to stay a little longer. And in Hashem, we'll pick up with this in 2 weeks. We'll be ready for Pasuk Gimel, or maybe more. We might start flying. Who knows?
Rabbi.